This is Lawrence Tuning, and these are my 88 friends.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one-man band. I'm the number one fan. Me and my 88. Me and my 88 friends.
Welcome to the show, me and my 88 friends. This is Lawrence Tuning, your host. We're going to do some songs today, and we're going to interview a great friend of mine who lives across the Atlantic Ocean in England. And via Zoom, we're going to have a conversation. So I want to start the show today with a song that was inspired by a trip that my wife and I took to England and Scotland a few years ago, when we went to visit my guest and his wife. The song is called Living in the Shadow.
Shadow of the glory of the Lord, looking forward to what is yet to come. But for now, I have found a peaceful path in the shadow of the glory of the Lord. I have chosen to abandon the ambitions of the past in pursuit of things that quickly fade. I have traded them all for a peaceful path in the shadow of the glory of the Lord. Things that used to matter have somehow lost their charm when compared to what shall be revealed. Now we see a shadow, a faint silhouette. One day all our hopes will be fulfilled. That used to matter have somehow lost their charm when compared to what shall be revealed. Now we see a shadow, just a faint silhouette. One day all our hopes will be fulfilled. Living in the shadow glory of the Lord, looking forward to what is yet to come. But for now, I have found a peaceful path in the shadow of the glory of the Lord. In the shadow of the glory of the Lord.
I have on the other end of this Zoom meeting my great friend from the United Kingdom, from England, Paul Dickin. Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon. It's great to see you and to hear you indeed.
It's morning here, it's afternoon there. Paul, let's start this thing out. I've heard a rumor, and I want to know if it's true. I hear that this show, Me and My 88 Friends, is the rage of England. They're talking about it on the chat shows. The newspapers are running articles like, what is this phenomenon that's sweeping the whole UK called Me and My 88 Friends? Is any of that true?
Well, if it is, it's passed me by.
All right.
Sorry.
Okay. Okay, Paul, let's talk. I want to talk about England. I want to talk about you. And, of course, we want to talk about the Lord. But let's start with the Queen. You have told me before that you refuse to watch The Crown. We watch it over here in America. And part of that is out of respect for the royal family. Is that true?
I think the truth is more the fact that my wife doesn't like it, so that I'm not going to sit and watch it on my own.
On that show, there was an episode where the young Queen Elizabeth contacts Billy Graham because he's having a crusade there. I think that would be around the year 1954. And she arranges a meeting with him because she seeks spiritual counsel from him. And it actually portrays her as being a deeply religious woman who kneels by her bed every night and says her prayers. Is that your understanding? What is your understanding of the faith of your queen?
To the best of my understanding, I would say she definitely is a follower of Jesus, but she's not overt in any of that, and she'll reference it almost in passing, and yet it is for her, a book came out a few years ago at a particular anniversary. She feels very much that her role as the Queen of England is one that's God-given, and she wishes to do that to the very best of her ability in service to him. That's the impression that I get of her role.
All right, let me ask you something about her, then we'll move on. I take it she's very popular over there, is that right?
I think she's popular, yeah. You'll be well aware that she's in her 90s now, and there are others to follow her. And whether Prince Charles is as popular, I doubt it. And I wonder whether there'll be questions asked about the monarchy that have just never really been entertained whilst the Queen has been alive. Because she's, as you know, the longest reigning monarch, and she's done a wonderful job. So we'll see.
Why do you think she's so popular?
I think she's got a humility about her, and as I mentioned, a sense of service and commitment to the role, a selfless service of being queen of the country.
That's wonderful. Now let's talk about one of her subjects named Paul Dickens. In other words, you. Tell my crowd where you grew up and where you live now.
Okay, I was born in a place called Banbury Cross, which is in Oxfordshire, and moved quite early on in life with my parents to Leicestershire, where my dad was a farmhand. We moved within Leicester to where my dad became a firefighter. And I grew up then the rest of my life in Leicestershire.
Tell me about your spiritual walk. When is the first time you felt drawn to Jesus Christ?
My grandparents on my mom's side, they were Christians, and they went to a chapel in the city. And my granddad would pick me up and take me along to Sunday school, which was on Sunday afternoons. And from then, I went away on camps for 3 or 4 consecutive years. And I think it was when I was 13 years old, we were at a camp sitting around the fire on the Friday night, and people were telling, they're giving their testimonies, which was something relatively new for me to hear. But within that was also talk about hell and this place that they were desperate to be saved from. And I confess, out of fear, I that night just asked the Lord into my life, because I was terrified of the very thought of going to a place where he wasn't.
So you bought a fire insurance policy that night, basically.
Yes.
And then you became a fireman later on. So, okay, so at 13 years old, so that was pretty much your walk with the Lord, just I don't want to come into judgment. Did you have any sort of a personal relationship with him during those early days?
There was something, some sort of seed that was planted within me, and there was a desire to know him more. And for probably 3 or 4 years, I found myself just seeking, searching. And I visited, I remember it all came to a bit of a head when I got what we call a moped, which is just a small motorcycle with pedals. And
Paul, let me interrupt that. They call mopeds liquor sickles over here, because you don't have to have if you lose your driver's license, you don't have a license to have a license to drive a moped. So if you get your license taken away for too much alcohol, you buy a moped, and they call it a liquor sickle. Liquor cycle, I guess you would call it. Anyway, so you had a liquor sickle, and you did what with it?
Well, I visited churches. I went to different ones each Sunday, and on my last one, I'd been there, and frankly, I was ready to give up, because the things that I'd heard, I didn't feel particularly welcome. And on the way home, my moped broke down, and I remembered a friend who lived nearby, and went knocking on the door. And to cut a long story short, the mother ended up inviting me to their church, where I subsequently went the following Sunday and loved it. And I met Vivian there, and we were part of the youth group there for many years.
I met you in 1978, I believe.
You did.
And by that time, you were living in the United States. And how did that come about?
Well, I when I left school, I failed my A-levels, as they're called, and all I ever really wanted to do was to visit the United States. And in fact, I even took my geography A-level because it was all about America. But I worked for about 8 months. My aunt lived in Massachusetts, and I then contacted her. I got enough money to come over and live for a little while. So I just wrote with a contact her one day, asked if I could join her for a time, and she invited me over, and that was it. She arranged for me to have a job with her employer, and I was settled in quite quickly place called Berlin, Massachusetts.
That's right. And how long did you stay in America?
I stayed for about 18 months, and I guess it was after about 4 or 5 months that I met yourself.
And I was thinking about this the other day, the way we met. Of course, we met at a concert. I had a band, Lawrence Tuning and the Eastland Band, and we sang at a ministry called Crossroads once a month for several months. That was in Sudbury, Massachusetts. All of these were in the general vicinity of Boston. And so we met. You also started doing some part-time work painting with my guitar player, Ron Scott. But the way we really met, that you came over to the house because you were, if you remember, you were trying to find a certain record album by Larry Norman.
That's right.
Larry Norman was the patron saint of contemporary Christian music. He and Andre Crouch were probably the two most popular. Well, he had put out this album, I'm sure you remember, called So Long Ago, The Garden. And on the cover, he was supposed to be Adam. And he was standing in the garden with his shirt off in a pile and some tall grass, but the grass was evidently not tall enough because they showed his belly button, his navel. I think that's what did it. It became controversial, and he was banned in Britain, right? They wouldn't sell it over in your country.
That's right. I couldn't get the record. And a friend of mine, Janet, she wanted that record. So I, that's how it happened. You said you'd get it for me, right?
It was the navel that sunk the ship on that one. They should have left the belly button off. It would have been fine. But I told you I could get a copy because it wasn't banned here. And we had a good close friend who owned a Christian bookstore. So when the record came in the mail, I think I called you or anyway, you came over to the house, and we can thank Larry Norman, God bless his soul, who has since died, for being the catalyst for a really wonderful friendship. So after that, I think you started hanging around a lot. You came over to the house. I think you even traveled with the band at times. I remember we went to Bar Harbor, Maine together. And then, Paul, I remember when you got the news that your green card was about to expire. And by that time, tell me if I'm wrong, that you really wanted to, do I have this right? You wanted to maybe even relocate here in America at that time. Is that right or not?
Yeah, yeah, well, I wasn't sure if you recall. There was a couple of companies that I'd worked for, one being Friendly's Ice Cream Stores, who said that they would work with me so I could get my green card. But you'll recall that we spent some time praying about it, and it just didn't seem right. It seemed appropriate and proper for me to come back to the UK. So yeah, I think it was probably August 79 when I came back home.
Well, that was a very sad day for me and for a lot of people. But it was shut door after shut door after shut door. And I think we all just had to give up. But I won't deny it was a very sad day because I knew we would not see each other very often. But while you were here, you were baptized. Had you ever been baptized before?
No, I mean, up until I came and met up with yourself and the band and joined the church that was meeting then, that small church that you were leading on a weekly basis, then truthfully, my faith was largely limited to Sundays, but I came to understand not least through yourself and others in that small church, that knowing Jesus was 24/7, and everything changed really. And one of the things that I wanted to do then was to be baptized. And it was, I still remember it to this day, poor as my memory might be. It was just you and me in a lake somewhere. I don't know where it was, but I do recall it was just you and me that, and you baptized me.
I don't remember where the lake was. It was more like a pond, I think. It wasn't that big. But that was a great joy to me to baptize you. And I want to stop here and sing a song that I wrote about baptism. I wrote it many, many years ago. It's called Baptism Song. So I want to sing that now in your honor. Oh, I used to read about him, how he walked in Galilee, how he went down to the Jordan so John the Baptist he might see. When he rose out of the water, a dove descended from the sky. Then he said that those who loved him would have to come and die. Take me down to the river, or take me up to the sea. Let me die beneath those waters. Let me lose myself in thee. When I rise out of those waters, a brand new creature I shall be. When I rise out of those waters, resurrected and free. Let me die to all my sins, Lord. Let me die to yesterday. All the wrongs that I've committed, let the waters wash away. All my trouble pass behind me, buried beneath the flowing tide. And the people all around me will know that I have died. So take me down to the river, or take me up to the sea. Let me die beneath those waters. Let me lose myself in thee. When I rise out of those waters, a brand new creature I shall be. When I rise out of those waters, resurrected and free. Dead when I go neath those waters, dead to sin and all its strife. When I rise out of those waters, resurrected to new life. So, Paul, I remember talking to your wife, your wonderful wife, Vivian, and she said that she noticed there was a change in you when you came back to England. There was a depth about you that was not there before. And can you talk about that? What changed in you?
Well, I think it was that experience of traveling around with yourselves and the band. And I remember, because you didn't have a lot of money, I didn't have much money either, but we would pray that God would provide, and he did, and in miraculous ways. I remember it only too well, and it was like I say, it was that transition from just attending church, believing in God, but not really having that deep relationship with the Lord Jesus. And that's what happened when I was in the United States and traveling around with yourselves and learning a great deal, and a lot of teaching that I was exposed to that I'd not heard before. And so, yeah, I did very much came back just with a desire to serve the Lord and to live for him every day. And that was, wonderful, wonderful transition.
When you moved back to England.
Yeah.
I don't think, at least from our conversations beforehand, you really had a clue as to what decisions you were going to make as far as your life work and that sort of thing. Or did you already know what you were going to do?
No, I didn't know. I got back and found myself looking at all sorts of different jobs and careers. And the only thing that I wanted to do I was join the fire service. And I reasoned that my dad had a good life, a good career in the fire service. And if it was good enough for him, it'd be good enough for me. So I applied to join. But was unsuccessful, not unsuccessful. They didn't have any vacancies at that time. So the other alternative was to join the police. And so the Northamptonshire Constabulary, I went for their test. They accepted me on interview, and I had a date when I was to be sworn in court. But 2 weeks before that happened, the fire service rang me up and said, "We now have some vacancies, and we'd like to re-interview you with a view to offering you a job." So I went for that, and they offered me a job, and I was in this wonderful position where, did I want to be a fireman or did I want to be a policeman? And I reasoned, if you're a policeman, you're a policeman 24/7. If you're a fireman, you're a fireman when you're at work. And so I chose to be a fireman.
Wow. So, Paul the fireman, several quick questions that have nothing to do with eternal matters. Did you have any trouble sliding down the pole?
I didn't, and I could even do it without my hands, my arms going round the pole. Quite proud of myself.
Could you slide up the pole?
Never tried that one.
Did you ever drive a fire truck?
Yeah, I did. After about 4 years, I took the driving test, and the very first fire call I went on, there were two fire engines that turned out from the station, and the one that I was driving, the second one, the fellow who was in the officer in charge seat next to me, he said to me when we got to the incident, "That was the first time you've driven, isn't it?" I said, "Yeah, how do you know?" He said, "It was the way that your foot was trembling over the accelerator pedal."
Did you ever climb the ladder to the very top?
Say again?
Did you ever climb the ladder all the way to the very top?
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the ladders was the turntable ladder. So that was 100 foot high, and that could just be in free air. And yeah, indeed, that's everybody did.
You know, you have every child I know in America has at one time fantasized about being a firefighter. I mean, most children, little children that you ask, what do you want to be when you grow up? They will invariably say firefighter, but you actually were able to be one for how many years?
31 years. There's quite a few funny incidents over the years. Many of them are quite traumatic, but I don't tend to recall those so much as the funny ones. One time, I'd been promoted this time and was looking after a what we called a watch, which was just a crew of firefighters. And we were turned out to the sound of an explosion at a school. And when we got there, there was no sign of anything. And there was a concert going on inside the school hall. And we came to find out it was a rendition of the 1812 overture. And when they came to the cannon sound, it was so impressive. It sounded like an explosion, such that a neighbour had rang it into the fire service as just that. And there was so little news at that time that it even made the city newspaper the next day. There's so many stories of practices within the fire service that teach about spiritual things. There was a tank, and we used to, it was a huge underground tank, and it was as black could be. So once you're in there, with if your torch was off, you had no idea where you are.
And now, wait a minute, torch, you mean a flashlight, right?
Yeah.
Didn't have a stick with fire growing and all of that. That's what we would call a torch. Okay, if your flashlight was off.
Yes, it's a flashlight. Okay, so, but without your flashlights, you couldn't see a thing. And we would practice with what you call guidelines. And these guidelines were set up so that firefighters would clip onto them and they'd know which way was into the job towards the fire and which way was out to a place of safety. But some great illustrations about, one that came to mind, you probably remember the film The Green Mile, where there's a scene in there where John Coffey meets with the wife of the warden and takes a disease from her. I think it's a tumor. And she says to him afterwards, I've seen you before in a dream. We were both in the darkness. I was looking to be found and you were there too. And we found each other. And I've thought about that and the darkness in that underground pit. And it's just such a beautiful illustration of how when we are find ourselves in the darkness, how the Lord comes to us. And if we want to be found, we will be found and rescued and brought out to a place of safety.
Okay. When you moved back to England, you met this wonderful wife. And I'm so glad that God didn't answer our prayers for you to stay in America, because you really have a fantastic wife, Vivian.
I do.
I wish I could get her in to come talk. But what do you appreciate about your wonderful wife the most?
I think what I would appreciate probably most is her encouragement throughout all the years. She's the one who sort of spurs me on. And I had a teacher in primary school who said to my parents, and my parents passed this on to me, rightly or wrongly, that I was a defeatist and would give up at the first hurdle. And there's a measure of truth to that. So to have Vivian as my wife is to have someone who has spurred me on and kept me going and encouraged me all along the way, without moaning or complaining ever, really. So she's just a gracious carer and someone who is very thoughtful towards me.
Now, Vivian told me years ago there's a certain song that I wrote that she liked a lot, and I want to stop here. We're going to play it. We sang it in a coffee house about 7 years ago. It's called Phone Call. Long for some reason, you've been on my mind, so I decided to call you whenever I could find the time. It must have been in high school when I saw you last. And you believe it's been all these years, time sure went by. Thank you.
she gave me your number. Said to say hello for her. How do you like Chicago? I'm still living in the East. Do you have any children now? We've got two. About to tell you, it's gonna be a big surprise. Something great has happened, something that changed my life. I gave my heart to Jesus, asked him to forgive my sin. You won't believe the difference since I followed him. Tell me why are you laughing? Was it something that I said? Tell me why are you laughing? Would you rather have me hang up instead? We were always best friends. I never thought you'd laugh at me. Wait, what are you saying? What is it that you want me to see? Heart to Jesus just as soon as you came home from the war, and you've been thinking of calling me, but you put it off a year or more. You were always my best friend, now you're my brother too.
We want to talk about, your former residence.
Okay.
Groovy Hall. And what an amazing place, just the way it was built, but also the great history behind it. And you don't expect a firefighter to own an estate like the estate that you lived at. Can you tell me a little bit about how you acquired this tremendous historical property, and just how all that came about, and what happened there way back hundreds of years ago?
Okay, so the property was about 400 yards from where my parents lived in Groovy, and I would visit them over lunchtimes. And one time, I'd seen the house up for sale in the newspaper, so. Walked up the road and had a walk around the back and just fell in love with it immediately. It just felt like an adventure I wanted to be part of. And we arranged to go look around formally, and I took Vivian with me. And we knew that it would need a huge amount of work, but we both were up for it. And so we put our own house on the market. And we went away on holiday. And when we came back, we were told the house has been sold. So we didn't want anywhere else. The only reason we put the house on the market was because we wanted to move to Groovy Old Hall. Anyway, about probably 8 months later, 6 or 8 months later, my sister-in-law told me that it had appeared back on the market once more. So Vivian said, well, we're not going through that putting the house on the market again. What I'll do is I'll write them a letter and we'll offer to swap with them and we'll make up the financial difference, because it was worth, excuse me, more than us, even in its derelict state. And she did that, to which I said, there's less than 1% chance that that'll work. Only to get a letter 2 days later to say that the vendors accepted the offer and they'd like to come and see what property it is that they'd be exchanging it with. So these were the grandchildren of the man who bought the house in 1926, who'd long since died. They came, visited, they liked the property. So there and then the deal was done and the date was set. And before we knew it, it was literally a matter of weeks. We found ourselves moving out of a house into that which was pretty much a derelict property. And indeed, just to get a bit more money that we needed on the mortgage, I had to put a sink in so that it got water running in and running out, because that alone made it habitable, by which a mortgage could be given on it.
So it was in really, really bad shape, but had been a very important house in English history. So tell us about that.
Okay, so there's a lady called Elizabeth Woodville, and she married John Gray. And John Gray was in the mid-1400s. He lived in Groby. So she marries him in 1452, it was, and Elizabeth moves to Groby.
And when you say Groby, you mean that actual house?
Well, round the back of the house, there was a medieval manor. So not the actual house, but the manor around the back of it is where they moved to. It was on the same property. And indeed, on the land there was also a Norman Motton Bailey. It was a very, very old site. So she married him, and he died, unfortunately, 9 years later in what was called the Battle of St. Albans. And she had her properties, her land taken off her. So she petitioned the king, Edward IV. And the story goes that in meeting with him, they fell in love. And in 1464, she married the King of England, Edward IV. And lived with him until he died in 1483. And she had both children with her former husband and also children with King Edward IV. And it was the children of King Edward IV who were known as the Princes in the Tower, which people may well have heard of. But it was one of her children with John Gray. His name was Thomas. He started to build a fancy gatehouse at Groby, and it was that those towers and that gatehouse that became part of Groby Old Hall that we subsequently bought. So a large part of the house goes back to the late 1400s, early 1500s.
Was a wonderful house. And tell me, that the two of those children were put in the Tower of London, right?
That's right.
By the subsequent king or queen? And
well, when Edward IV died, his cousin, I think it was, Richard III, he was the one who basically saw the opportunity to seize the monarchy. And he had one of Elizabeth's children executed. His name was Richard, but Thomas, he escaped and was exiled to France. So it was Richard III, and strangely enough, it was Richard III whose body was found just a few years ago in Leicester City, and they dug up a car park. I can't remember how they found it. There was a particular lady involved who felt she knew exactly where he was buried, and she was right, and they found him. And he was the last king of England to have died in battle. That was Richard III.
What you call a car park, we would call a parking lot, right?
Yeah.
So he was found on a parking lot. He was the one that said, "My kingdom for a horse"?
I believe he did.
Yes, he did. So those two little boys, one of whom was executed, used to live at your house. Is that right?
Yeah. And the other one was the older one. His name was Thomas. Like I say, he was the one who started the work of the gatehouse, which eventually became the house that we lived in.
And you were also on an archaeological show in England. You actually were on the show, walking your dog. I saw the show. And tell me about that show. Then we'll move back to spiritual matters.
Okay, so that was filmed in 2010, and it was a program called Time Team. And it doesn't run anymore, but it ran for 18 or 19 years. And there's basically a team that come visit a site, normally probably between 50 and 70 people, and they excavate, they look for what's underneath the ground. And at our place, they were very excited because, as I mentioned earlier, there's a Norman Mottam Bailey, which dated, I think it was about 1076. And then there was this medieval manor that was behind the house where we lived in the grounds there. And they excavated that and found the old hall, and they found what's called an aureal window. They found the chapel and the cloisters, and indeed in the garden underneath a very much overgrown hedge was the bedchamber where they would have slept, a two-story bedchamber as well. So lots of excitement in Groby, and they found many things which they hadn't expected to find. And the documentary, it was termed The House of the White Queen. And you can still get it, as you can with most programs, on YouTube and the likes these days.
So you've lived a very interesting life, Paul. A lot of people that do interview shows, they seek out famous people. None of my people are famous because I'm not famous. But everybody's got an interesting story. There's an author I've learned about here in America named Studs Terkel, and he won the Pulitzer Prize, maybe even the Nobel Prize. But he would just interview firemen and plumbers and regular people. And but what an interesting story you have, my brother. So I would just want to talk about just a few more quick things. I was thinking about the nature of friendship. You are one of my closest friends, but we figured it out when you moved back to England. We have seen each other once every about 7 years, which I think we figured it out. We've only seen each other four or five times since 1979. And yet the friendship is rich. It's deep. Every time we get together, it's like, you know, we never were apart. And that's a wonderful blessing from the Lord. I read somewhere that a person is lucky if they have four or five true lifetime friends. And I don't know what we want to say about that. I'm just noting that our friendship has been really rich, even though it's very rare. Maybe that's why we have a good friendship. It's very rare that we see each other. I don't know. But anyway...
Yes, it is. It is a rich friendship, and it's like you say. It's one of those things whenever you see one another again, you just pick up like it was yesterday, like at the last time that we were together. It's just the most natural thing in the world, and you know that the great encouragement that you've been to me over the years too. So, yeah, wonderful older brother.
You have also been I don't know how to put this. I sort of say a thorn in my side, but that doesn't sound right. You have goaded me at times to get back to the center of the most important things. I'll never forget, Paul. I don't know if we'll put this on the tape or not. You came over and spent I was touring New England, and you had lived there many years earlier, and rode around with me. You thought you were going to drive the car, but the rental company wouldn't let you, so you had to put up with my terrible driving as a one, you know, I don't see out of one eye, so things look closer. I'm always putting on the brakes or getting too close. But I remember we went to the D.L. Moody grave and home.
Yeah.
And at that time, I was doing a lot of writing on my website about doing a new album, and of course, Anchor Holes had been a big hit and all that. And in your own quiet way, we're right in there, you nailed me to the wall. You rebuked me in such a nice way that I couldn't get mad at you, but it was a jolt in a good way. And do you remember what you told me?
Go on, you tell it.
You said, I noticed in your website, you're talking about the record. You're talking about basically the music career, this kind of thing. And he said, I just want you to know that that wasn't what turned my life, not turned it around, but that isn't what made an impact on my life and changed me. It was what you had to say about Jesus and what you had to say about a walk with him. You seem to be talking a lot about your music and doors that are opening up, and which is nothing wrong with that. But you made it clear to me that that wasn't the thing that changes people's lives. It's the talking about Jesus and the pointing toward Jesus. Is that fair to say that you said that?
Yeah, I'm mortified. I hadn't wanted to cut you to the quick. It wasn't particularly even thought through. It was just part of our conversation, but it was real. And
it was good. It was a positive thing. What do they say in Proverbs? That iron sharpens iron. And I never have liked that verse a lot, because most people that quote it are obnoxious, really mean-spirited people that just like to offend people in the name of being honest. But it really did sharpen me and reminded me of the commitment I made to the Lord years ago, that he would be number one. He would be the focus. So I thank you for your gentle rebuke. Paul, I want to sing you a song that I wrote just for you. We all knew that you were moving back to England, and instead of seeing you every day, we'd see you maybe once every 7 years. That was a terrible thought. It really was. It was like a death. And it affected me a lot, because I felt really close to you as a brother, not just a Christian brother, but like a brother. And so I wrote this song, and I named it Song to Sir Dickens. I don't think I've ever sung it in public, maybe one time. But I sang this about friendship and about the fact that in heaven we won't have these goodbyes and these distances and all. So I'm going to go over to the piano, and I'm going to sing this, and then we'll have a few final words. In heaven there will be no sad farewells, and streams of tears will never flow again. The word goodbye will be an unused term from long ago, and we will be together in a better land. Mighty oceans to separate good friends for miles and miles. The wall of time will be torn down, never to rise again. We will be together in a better land. So may God go with you till we meet again, till we meet again to share what God has done. And God go with you till we greet each other again, and I hope we see each each other many times more than forever together. God's shore. Heaven, there will be no mighty oceans to separate good friends for miles and miles. The wall of time will be torn down, never to rise again. Better land. So may God go with you till we meet again, till we meet again and share what God has done. And God go with you till we greet each other again, and I hope we see other many times more than forever together on God's shore. Well, Paul, it's been great to be with you via Zoom. We're going to close out with a song that you used to like years ago. It's called Carry On.
Carry on, carry on, carry on. To my brothers and my sisters who are facing persecution and they're spending time in prison for the things the Lord has done. When they kick you and they beat you, no matter how they treat you, we'll be praying that the Lord will give you strength to carry on. Carry on, carry on. It won't be long before we gather round God's throne. Carry on, carry on. To the students on the campus who are speaking out for Jesus, when the winds of opposition swirl around you day by day, even if you're mocked and hated, don't you be intimidated. There's a great reward that's waiting if you'll only carry on. Carry on, carry on. It won't be long before we gather round God's throne. Carry on, carry on. To the lonely missionary, to the pastor growing weary, to the parents of the wayward child for whom you prayed so long, this is not the time to let up, it's the time to lift your head up. When you're sowing tears, you're reaping joy, don't stop, carry on, carry on. Maybe you're facing great temptation and you need some consolation, 'cause the devil's doing all he can to make you trip and fall. Yes, the devil will accuse you, he'll even try to bruise you, but resist him and he'll flee from you. Get on, carry on.